You are listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simpler Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. This is episode 111 for mid-April 2018 of Simple Living Works. We feature part one of our conversation with Susan Taylor of Just Money Advisors about her book, What About Our Money? A Faith Response. This part wrestles with systems.
So many of us want strong, solid advice on using our money. We want our money to advance our values. We know that money talks, so we want our money to be saying what is in our hearts to say. We want our money to speak up for our planet, not the corporations destroying the species, the air, the land, the water. We want our money to speak up for justice and sharing and caring, but there's so much advice. Who can we trust? Finding advice that truly does what we want can be challenging. So here's some good news. We completely trust the person we're talking with today. We trust her so much with that we're planning not just this podcast episode with her, but the next two as well. So, hey, stay with us.
Greetings, Lee, from Sioux City, Iowa, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. And thanks to you for all the work that you've put out, Jerry, to interview Susan Taylor, about her new book. I believe we're bringing our listeners something really important with these next three episodes. And listeners, I urge you to get a copy of Susan's book that these episodes elaborate on. What About Our Money? A Faith Response. It treats so many money questions in such a readable, sensitive manner. So a copy of Susan's new book is available from United Methodist Women. It's excellent for study groups or for personal reading and reflection on it. See the ordering information that will be in the written introduction of this podcast. I think it's important right here in this first of three episodes with Susan, to introduce her further in terms of her many achievements and involvements. I very much like the introduction that the Natural Investments website gives Susan, so here it is. Susan is part of the team at Just Money Advisors Incorporated, a Louisville, Kentucky financial planning firm that specializes in socially responsible and community investing. She works with her husband, Andy Loving. Susan writes about issues of money and spirituality, publishes in such magazines as Sojourners and Presbyterians Today. She writes regularly for Faith and Money Network, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit organization. She has led workshops for parents, helping them teach their children to deal with money in ways that acknowledge their values and foster personal integrity. She also works with groups of children and high school students around questions of finance, faith, and the vital role of economic justice in creating and sustaining peace. A native Kentuckian, you'll hear that in her voice, Susan is a third-generation graduate of Western Kentucky University back in 1980 for her. In 1997, she earned a Ph.D. in economics from the University of Maryland, College Park, focused on that in that Ph.D. program on labor markets and income inequality. From 1996 to 2000, she worked as an economist in the corporate treasury for Bank of America, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. As a corporate economist, she forecasted and interpreted economic data such as unemployment rates and industrial output, as well as presenting economic briefings to customer groups throughout the Southeast. Within the bank, she was known to consistently represent the perspective of low-income and working people in her readings of the data, highlighting the key question, how will this affect people? Honoring family commitments, she and Andy returned to Kentucky in 2000, establishing the Louisville office of Just Money Advisors Incorporated, which now serves clients in more than 25 states. There's a whole lot that she's doing there, right? And I am so grateful that she's given us the time to share her book and her thoughts with you, our listeners. Susan is a committed mother of two teenage children. I was already going to a member of the Baptist Church. She's a public school supporter. She's a member of Jeff Street Baptist Church at Liberty. She's an animal lover, shares her home with three cats and a dog. She's a pianist. She is vice president of the board of directors of Faith and Money Network in Washington, D.C. In this introduction, I referred to her work with children, and if you listen to episode 78 of the Common Good podcast, you'll hear an episode on relating to money in a toxic culture and parenting children about money. You can see the link again in the written introduction. Okay, so let's get into the interview with Susan right now.
It's such a pleasure to speak to Susan Taylor again. She's one of the principals with Just Money Advisors, and she's written a new book called What About Our Money? A Faith Response. Now, this was written specifically for the United Methodist Women, but being a member of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, or the ELCA, I felt very comfortable with this book. It was so encouraging to me. I would assume it would be well received in any mainline denomination, particularly those of a progressive bent like the Presbyterian Church USA, United Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ, etc. So, Susan, how did this book come about?
The book was commissioned by the United Methodist Women for one of their annual mission studies. The United Methodist Women have a very proactive social justice perspective in their work and in their studies, and don't shrink from challenging topics, obviously, because in most churches, money is the last thing anybody wants to talk about, but instead they went after it. And, you know, where do we find some constructive conversation in our community of faith around money? And they came to Faith and Money Network, which is a nonprofit ministry born out of the Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C. It's been around for 40 years. That works on these issues. They had liked some of the things that I'd written before through Faith and Money Network, and that's how I got linked to them. Spent about a year working with their editorial committee, refining the outline and getting multiple perspectives from their many social justice-related offices about what aspects of the money conversation could be most constructive for United Methodist Women. As you said in your intro, though, I think it's much broader. It comes from that motivation for them, but the topics, the perspective is certainly not unique to United Methodist Women. And I think for people of any faith background, or even just a values background, would find real resonance with the issues raised.
Well, we've already agreed that we're not going to talk so much about the biblical basis for your book, because I had the pleasure of speaking with Walter Brueggemann in a two-part series about a year ago about money in the Bible.
Good.
But so let's start. What are the systems that get in our way when it comes to dealing with faith and money?
It's interesting to start there. That was not where we started when we were strategizing for the book. My proposal had originally been much more on the personal side, you know, our consumption and some personal financial planning issues, our giving, those kinds of money issues. And it was really in the editorial board conversation around that we also have to include this systemic conversation, how the ways we live around our money are affected by the systems around us, and how the way we deal with our money affects the systems around us. So, you know, there are any number of ways to address this topic, and I don't pretend that mine was the most brilliant in any sense. Really, my goal was to just try to introduce the idea, some ideas around recognizing that we have some external constraints on our lives created by the systems around us. But then to challenge the idea that those constraints then mean that there's nothing we can do to deal more constructively with our money. So we looked at, in the book, I talked some about the education system. I started there because it's such a visible system that most people have had exposure to and participation in, and how sometimes the financial issues around school financing have led to very different outcomes for different groups of people, creating and indeed exacerbating economic injustices. And then I went a step deeper into some of the financial system injustices that have arisen, specifically looking at what I call the poverty industry in the financial world, the world I work in, that has developed entire industries of financial services targeting low-income people, the people who can least afford to spend more.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation with Susan Taylor.
The spring issue of Jubileo, the One Earth Jubilee newsletter, has been sent out to subscribers. It includes 10 reasons for being part of a One Earth Jubilee delegation to Mexico, hosted by the Jubilee Circles there. Also an article, The Altar of Growth, written by a banker, Pat Trahan. Another on some cities that are pushing back on extreme wealth. That one features the work of Chuck Collins. Another article on why there is so much meanness. And, well, if you aren't already a subscriber, we invite you to become one this month. The Jubileo News will come out every quarter, be in your inbox 4 times a year. So let's return to our exciting conversation, What About Our Money, with Susan Taylor.
I went a step further then into some systems related to my own industry, the financial industry, and the way that it's created products specifically targeting low-income people with financial services, alternative financial services that are expensive and even predatory, things like payday lending or tax refund anticipation loans and check cashing services. The people who can least afford it to pay exorbitant amounts for the types of financial transactions that we all do. We all check our cash our checks and send in our tax return to get a refund if we are getting one, that kind of thing. But they become predatory and create a system that makes people's poverty worse. And then diving even deeper into our economic system overall, that create injustices that can appear to be the natural result of market forces. And who are we to meddle with natural forces, right? So these are not injustices that we could possibly fix. You know, there's kind of a myth around that, and I tried to challenge that, particularly from people of faith, that it is indeed our responsibility to challenge those so-called natural forces and to show that they are not natural at all, but rather a result of some specific choices that we have made in the legal and policy and financial cultural realms that result in great inequality and economic oppression. So that was the approach for that chapter. Obviously, you can only do just a basic introduction on some of those questions because they're so deep and pervasive that people spend lifetimes actually studying the systemic economic injustices.
Well, your next chapter is called Scarcity or Sufficiency. And how do you deal with those seemingly contradictory terms?
That chapter is one of my favorites, actually, because so often when we look at money, both from those systemic, you know, that overarching systemic view, or personally, there's so much fear attached to it, anxiety, because we just can't, we as human beings, I mean, have, we're very clear that we do not have control over everything in our lives. And the what-if scenarios often involve money. You know, what if there's not enough to take care of my family? What if one of us gets really sick? I don't want to be poor when I'm old. What if I can't afford nursing home care? So it really gets at the one of the core issues of the heart around money, of where do we find our security. So I tried to recognize that this is a very human issue.
You've been listening to one part of our conversation with Susan Taylor on her book, What About Our Money? A Faith Response. I'd like to reflect a little bit on this particular part of the interview on systems or wrestling with systems. And I was thinking as I listened, Jerry, to your conversation with Susan about this very eloquent passage from the New Testament in the Epistle of Ephesians, chapter 6, where it talks about all these systems that we wrestle with. And it says, we're not wrestling just with flesh and blood. This passage really respects the power of systems. And it says, we wrestle with principalities and powers. And of course, Susan identifies these in her book. There's the law system, the political system, the educational system, the system of religions, the system of finance, of economics, and on and on. So all of these systems shape our lives, but we try to shape them too. There's a real wrestling match going on in most of us between the systems and our values. Sometimes they reinforce us, force our values, sometimes not. There's always a huge gap between talking about the systems in theory and then how we experience them in daily life. So, and we might, for example, be talking about how a system works, not pointing out that it works that way for some people. Most systems work in favor of wealth and accumulating wealth, and the systems work fine if you're at the top. They never work as well if you're a person of color or if you're a person in poverty. And those systems, this is true of around the world. So we're all wrestling with these systems. Susan spends some time in her book on the educational system. And that's so relevant right now because we see teachers in at least 4 states having major protests. Oklahoma right now is especially hot with teachers marching to the Capitol and making demands, which I almost don't like putting it that way. They're really asking for us all as citizens to say we still really believe that educating our children is a community project, that we really need to get together and educate, invest in our future. It isn't even right to talk about taxes, really, because it's an investment. But there's been shrinking public funding through state and federal taxes. And so this means children in places are using textbooks that don't even have covers. They may not even be a complete book. And so this is what teachers are pushing back against. It's really worth listening to how these teachers are wrestling with systems. And then, of course, there was the whole thing about, do guns in schools, is that a good systemic response in education? And students are saying, no, we don't want guns in schools. We want textbooks. We want the investment in education. not in guns. We want it to be protected and safe. So Susan also says in her book, she discusses capitalism. She points out that capitalism has some strengths and plenty of weaknesses. She really wants us to understand that capitalism is not just a natural system, that it's something that humans have created and imposed, and its injustices are human creations, and where it functions favorably, that too is a human creation. She doesn't, here I would just raise a question with her, really, because she never mentions that capitalism is a system dependent upon growth, and I can't reconcile that a system that depends on growth with the natural systems of our planet, which have a way of growing and dying, but they do not depend upon infinite growth more and more. So I think that's a whole discussion that doesn't make it into Susan's book that has enormous relevance. She quotes Ron Sider, a author and theologian, especially prominent in past years in some Christian circles, where he said, left to itself, a market-driven economy, such as capitalism, will simply supply what the wealthy can pay for, even if millions of poor folk starve. And that just shows how I mentioned at the start that of this little reflection that capitalism especially works for the wealthy. The systems in general are created to work better for people at the top. So those are just some thoughts I have in our wrestling with systems. And just if we watch the news, we see it all the time, different ones of us. We all are wrestling with them, and some times the wrestling just flares up into major strikes, boycotts, and that kind of thing. Well, Jerry, I know you have some thoughts too, and you have educated me off mic a little bit on the gig economy, as you call it. So help us understand that. Share with us your reflection on that, because lots of us like using some of the new systems that are emerging, and they have some real downsides.
Indeed, the systems are changing. And we might just think of it as natural cultural change. But a lot of these changes are to the benefit of the wealthier people. So I'm asking people just to be aware of these changes, because some of them are happening. We may not be aware of the implications. Now, as a musician myself, I understand the concept of a gig. That is, you know, some musicians have gigs, you know, on weekends at a bar, or they may have a gig at a concert hall. Some musicians have regular gigs, and some musicians have sporadic gigs. Well, this now has taken on a much broader meaning, that some people don't have regular jobs. They have to depend on part-time work or work here, work there. I mean, you and I, Lee, are members of the baby boomers generation, but now the millennials or the Gen Xers aren't getting necessarily, you know, full-time jobs with benefits and retirement. They're dependent on, you know, what you might call day work or piecework. And probably two classic examples of this gig economy are the new ride services, Lyft and Uber, that you know, people just depend on. They make themselves available 24 hours a day so that they can give people rides. Now, this is helping with some income, but it's not necessarily consistent, and it's having an impact also on, let's say, part of the existing system, regular taxis. We've probably heard stories of taxi drivers in New York City. Several have committed suicide the last few months because they can't make it any longer because of the competition with the unregulated Uber and Lyft drivers. So I'm just asking people to be aware that, you know, the young adults nowadays, even those who are graduating from college, can't always get a secure job and are dependent on the gig economy. Likewise, we have a lot of people who we depend on for our food supply. especially immigrants who whose jobs are now being in jeopardy because the federal government wants to put wants to stop the flow of workers from the South. We need to be aware of that. This will have an impact not only on us, but also, of course, on them, in that many of them are not leaving for convenience. They're leaving for their homes for safety and security reasons. So these are just a couple of examples of changes that are going on among systems that we really need to be conscious about and think about how these play into our values.
You know, Jerry, off mic earlier, you said something about the calls for workers in Sioux City, Iowa, where you are at this time with your family. I was intrigued by that. So in some places, people can't get jobs. In other places, there's lots of requests for jobs, although they're you know, is it? So my question really is it because there aren't people there who want those jobs, or is it because there really is a shortage of people, period, to take that, so they need to be imported people from other parts of the country?
Sure, we see billboards for signing bonuses. We see ads in the paper for signing bonuses for people to work at the meatpacking plants and the telemarketing services here in the area. Some of these are low-paying jobs. Many of them are adequate-paying jobs. So there is a distribution problem in terms of workers and where the workers are available around the country.
Okay, so all of this is more reason why we seek an economy for the common good. That's what these podcasts are really about, looking at doing an analysis the best we can on getting to the root of where problems are, and also at the same time identifying alternatives that truly, truly work. And I'm going to keep working on Jubilee One Earth Economics. I know you, things like this just inspire me. I want to say... one last call for anyone who wants to join a delegation to Mexico and visit the two Jubilee Circles we have there outside of Puebla City and another in the state of Chiapas, San Cristobal. An excellent exposure to people who are working at alternative economics from the bottom up and making some things work for justice and for livelihoods. I hope you'll join us. Information is on the website at casajubileo.org.
And if you'd like to make a donation to the Common Good podcast, just click on the donate button on the casajubileo.org website. That's casajubileo.org, casajubileo. Jubilee is a mostly volunteer 501c3 nonprofit organization, so your donations are tax deductible. When you donate, if you ask for a copy of the little mini book on forming powerful little Jubilee circles, we'll send you one. Circles help us beneficially radicalize our work for change. Donate $50 or more all at once or in quarterly payments and receive upon request an autographed copy of Lee's book, From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, released in early 2017. By donating, you'll know that in this time of crisis, you're making a difference. We've made some significant changes at Simple Living Works for 2018. The Simple Living Works Weekly Digest has been discontinued, though the monthly digest of links to articles on colleagues' websites continues on the Simple Living Works site and is updated weekly. The Simpler Living Weekly Nudge and Daily Nudge both continue. Subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good podcast, Simple Living Works podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events such as non-conform freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Please let us hear your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good podcast or the Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Well, Lee, it's time to wrap up this episode of Simpler One Earth Living podcast. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we need you to know about the podcast. Please subscribe to our podcast and to our Jubilee Economics and One Earth blogs. We post nearly every week, so if you're subscribed, you'll be notified when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blog through our website. Subscribe to the Common Good Podcast or Simple Living Works Podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Have you liked us on Facebook yet? Well, please do, and leave us a message. We don't hear from you nearly enough. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the One Earth Project, wishing you well as we strive together to bring One Earth economics into being for the common good.
Simply so others can simply live, learn to live simply so others can simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.